Let's give everybody a second to get in and out of the courtroom. Go ahead. You may dispose of those glasses. And now you may proceed.
Please, my name is Pete Wegman, the Remmel-Ludke Law Firm here in Lincoln. I represent Christy Shaley, the appellant in this case. This is an appeal from a jury verdict in favor of the defendants in Gage County District Court about a year ago. We'd ask that you send this back for a new trial with instructions for the trial court to direct verdict against both defendants on the issue of negligence. First thing I want to talk about is the court's denial of our motions for a directed verdict on negligence. I think the record is full of overwhelming evidence of the negligence of both defendants, and I don't think reasonable minds could differ that the acts of both defendants were negligent as a matter of law. There really weren't any controverted facts. The only real controverted facts here with respect to the Dulles Carrier semi-truck was it going 50 miles per hour at impact, or was it going 50 kilometers per hour, 30 miles per hour at impact? Everything else, there wasn't anything contradicted about. Here's what happened.
So are you telling us that there were no reasonable minds on the jury?
I think I'm telling you that. And I think, you know, this is a negligence allocation case, is what this case was, and I'll get to that jury instruction in a minute, but we had four vehicles. We had three passenger vehicles and a semi-truck that were faced with the same towering plume of smoke they could see for miles away. The three southbound passenger vehicles, all under the range vision rule, entered the smoke at 30 to 20 to 15 miles per hour. Those vehicles all came to a stop in the smoke. Coming northbound is a commercial vehicle that has some additional duties that a passenger vehicle doesn't have. First one is, under the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act, probably the most critical regulation is what we call the extreme caution regulation, which says if you're operating a commercial motor vehicle and you face a hazardous condition, you have to exercise not just caution, extreme caution. And those regulations specifically identify smoke covering a roadway as a hazardous condition. So the trucker had that additional duty. And on top of that, it wasn't just a commercial motor vehicle. It was a commercial motor vehicle pulling an oversized load. She had a special single permit truck, single trip permit issued by the Nebraska Department of Roads. And that had two specific things in it. It said travel is prohibited. It didn't say extreme caution. It said travel is prohibited.
Have we ever said that a violation of regulations is negligence per se?
No. And we're not saying that. But in this case, we have regulations and rules that were clearly violated by truck driver and clearly violated by the farmer starting a fire. And on top of it, you've got this truck driver who says he's a professional with 40 years of experience driving commercial motor vehicles. And he tells the jury, this is the worst smoke he's ever encountered in 40 years of driving a truck.
So let me see, is your position the defendant's negligence must be determined before you get to the contributory negligence?
Well, I think in this case, of course.
Well, when you make your motion for a directed verdict, is the jury entitled at that time to also look at your client's fault?
Yes.
To determine an issue whether the defendants were negligent.
We just moved for a directed verdict on the defendant's negligence. We admitted that we didn't object to the contributory negligence instruction because we admitted there's an issue of contrib. Our client had crossed the road, crossed the center line, partially crossed the center line at 1 to 2 miles an hour when she couldn't see. Clearly a jury could consider that to be a negligent act. We didn't ask for a directed verdict on that. But this truck driver had a decision to make. He's half a mile to a quarter mile away from the smoke when he figures out it's on the road. The uncontroverted evidence is this smoke covered both ditches, both shoulders, both lanes of traffic. And it's a straight road, and he tells us, uncontrovertedly, he never saw couldn't see, never saw these three vehicles that were stopped. Now, if those three southbound vehicles instead had been stopped for northbound, this trucker piled into them at 30 miles an hour or 50 miles an hour, would we really be talking about, was that negligence or not going in that smoke? I mean, this is exactly why we have those regulations. And what caused the damage here was the load. This cultivator extended about 1 foot 11 inches on both sides of this trailer. Another inch, you would add an escort vehicle. And it was the oversized load that ripped the top off. This is Shaley's Durango, just like it was a can opener. So he had a decision to make as he's approaching the smoke at 60 miles an hour. He had time to stop. He said he didn't know why he didn't. Told the jury it was probably a bad choice to go in the smoke. Now, I don't know how that's not negligence as a matter of law. In the same way with the farmer. Only thing the farmer did right was that the temperature for the burn was within range. The humidity was too low. The wind speed was wrong. Wind direction was wrong. You can give the farmer every reasonable inference of these facts, and it's negligent as a matter of law. And then we get to the jury instruction.
Can I back up? What's the duty of the farmer?
The duty of the farmer is to conduct a burn with reasonable care and to prevent an obstacle like smoke from getting on a highway.
It's the duty to burn like reasonable people burn.
Like reasonable people burn.
The issue of whether or not there is a duty is a question of law.
Question of law. And I mean,
but is the scope of the duty a question of fact?
I think the scope of the duty is a question of law. Is it reasonable?
Well, that's just what you told us with respect to the trucker, right? Well, not only that there's a duty, but this is the parameters of it.
And again, you're saying that
is or isn't a question of fact.
Well, I think that part's a question of fact. I mean, I don't think any reasonable mind could look at these facts and say that farmer wasn't negligent. I mean, his own expert said he didn't have enough water, didn't have enough materials, didn't have the right weather conditions, and had he known those, he wouldn't have given the burn permit. And then we get to this jury instruction, and it's really embarrassing when you have a long, good, clean trial and you mess up something as simple as jury instructions. And I don't think anybody in this case would disagree that this instruction stated the law wrong on a very critical element of this case. For almost 3 hours, almost the entire deliberation time, these jurors had an instruction that said, if you find that the plaintiff's contributory negligence is equal to or greater than either of the defendants, she loses. In other words, for almost 3 hours, this jury had an instruction that said, if you think, for example, the farmer's negligence was 1% of this.
Did the judge properly correct the instructions?
Well, no. Because, you know, we weren't in the room. We had agreed that we would not be in the room because the defense counsel weren't present when he did this instruction. And to correct it, you really had to say something like this. Folks, I don't know where you are in your deliberations, but there's been something is wrong significantly about the law here. And what I'm about to tell you that's correct may require you to go back to the very beginning of your deliberations, depending on where you are. Instead, here's what the judge said. And now, ladies and gentlemen, jury, there is a correction that I wanted to make in one of the instructions before you end your deliberations. And he just reads it and says, this is different than what I gave you before. I'll leave this with you, and you can compare it to what you have. Didn't even take the old one away.
So did you object to that?
We weren't in the courtroom. We had agreed because the defense counsel had left that we wouldn't be in the courtroom when he did this. We trusted him to try to do it right, and I don't think he did. But again, that goes to the point that the case law says, when you have an instruction that materially misstates the law in a vital element, you just can't fix that. You can't fix it with a corrective instruction. It is plain error.
So what do you think the judge should have done at that point?
Well, the best he could have done, I mean...
Should he have declared a mistrial?
I think he probably should have declared a mistrial. I mean, it's plain error.
Did you ask for that?
Didn't ask for that. I don't think I have to. I mean, I know I'm going to hear about that, but, you know, ones that found it. And I suppose if we violated our ethical provisions, we could have sat back and said, well, let's just see what the verdict comes and we can appeal. But we brought it to everybody's attention. And I know it was too late, and I apologize for that. It's embarrassing to be here talking to you guys about this. But we did what we could. We thought he would try to fix it. It wasn't fixed right. And what the judge tried to do just underscores the fact that when you have a plain error like that, you can't fix it. You can't unring that bell. And when you get a verdict, it's garbage in, garbage out, fruit of the poison tree or whatever. And so I just ask that you send it back and with instructions to direct on negligence against both defendants. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Carlson, good morning.
This is a case where reasonable minds can differ about whether reasonable minds can differ. It wasn't just the issue of contributory negligence that the jury could have found and did find for the defendant on.
Before you proceed, are you taking the entire 10 minutes?
No. I'm just taking five, and then Mr. Gailey will take the other five.
Thank you.
In this case, the jury could have and did find that the defendants were not negligent. They never reached the issue of contributory negligence. So it's harmless error, even if it was error, to have instructed them that way on contributory negligence. The jury came back with a verdict that said that the plaintiff did not meet her burden of proof as to either of these defendants. Now, that might have been a finding that in my case, the farmer met his duty of reasonable care. He had the duty under Brown v. MVP, the case that's often cited by the plaintiffs, he had the duty to exercise ordinary care when he burned that material there. The court has never said that the farmer has a duty or NPD had a duty or anyone else burning has a duty to prevent smoke from getting on the roadway. That's not a duty that this court has ever imposed in its history. The court has said, when you're burning materials, you have a duty of reasonable care. Now, that's why we have a jury system. We have a jury system so they can evaluate, did the farmer act in a reasonably prudent manner when he did what he did? Now, was the wind speed perhaps 6 miles an hour instead of 8 miles an hour? Was the humidity perhaps 21% instead of 25%? Maybe. But it's the jury's duty then to say, on those facts, was it still reasonable for the farmer to proceed? He called Mr. Robinson, and he said, I have a burn permit. I can burn the first field. Can I go ahead and burn the second field on my burn permit? Robinson said, yes, sure. Now, one of the things that a jury does is it evaluates the credibility of testimony, right? Well, if you look at Robinson's testimony in the record, he answered yes to every leading question he was given. He said, well, maybe I wouldn't have issued that burn permit if I'd known this and this. And then 10 minutes later, he was asked, well, was what the farmer had sufficient? Yes. He didn't argue or disagree with any question that he was asked on the stand. So the jury may have disregarded a lot of that, or maybe it didn't. Maybe it found that the sole cause of the accident, and I apologize, plaintiffs make a fair point in their reply brief. I use the term efficient intervening cause, and I probably shouldn't have just said sole proximate cause. The jury could have found that the sole proximate cause was the fact that the plaintiff decided to drive into this cloud of smoke, into the opposing lane of traffic, when she couldn't see it. The counsel says, well, there were four vehicles, three of them were stopped, and one was proceeding, which is the truck driver. Well, you know what? There were four vehicles on that road that day in the smoke. One vehicle, plaintiff's vehicle, chose to go into the opposing lane of traffic when she couldn't see. The jury very well could have found that that was the sole proximate cause of the accident, was going into the other lane into traffic and heading right for that truck. And the facts did differ slightly. It wasn't as if there were undisputed facts all the way across. There were differences in the wind speed testimony. It wasn't so much that others testified to the exact wind speed. Yes, we had the records, the climatology records. But there was also the responders that came to the scene and said it was windy. There was other testimony that said there was a slight breeze. So there was differing testimony on breeze. There was different testimony on the wind speed, or on the wind direction, whether or not it changed directions. There was differing testimony on the exact position of the plaintiff's car. Was it coming up, and did it strike Nancy Stewart's car and then bounce into that lane and hit oncoming driver, which you can see the facts, it might have looked like that. Did she hit it about the same time? Because she first strikes, the plaintiff first strikes a vehicle in front of her, back of that vehicle, and then she's, according to Nancy Stewart's testimony, she's about parallel to that when that vehicle strikes. But according to the plaintiff's testimony, she's back further. So there were all kinds of things for the jury to evaluate and decide. Credibility of testimony, these minor facts. At the end of the day, it did evaluate those issues. It did decide those issues for the defense. And that verdict should stand. The plaintiff had a fair trial, and if there was any error with regard to that jury instruction, he invited that error at that conference, in that telephone call with Judge Bryant. He said, yes, I agree to your corrected instruction. I agree to the procedure. I agree that we won't be there. You go in and you do that. He never moved for a mistrial. Under Cortez v. Lopez, he had to move for a mistrial to preserve that error. He didn't do that. He invited that error. It's not plain error when it's corrected. At the end of the day, it was fair, and that's why I ask you, Your Honors, to affirm that decision, to affirm that judgment on the defense verdict. I'll give the rest of time, Mr. Daly.
Thank you very much. Mr. Gailey, good morning.
Good morning, Chief Justice Evigan, members of the court. My name is Steve Gailey. I appear today for defendants Appalese Dellis Carriers and Frank Lukacs. Dellis Carriers is a mom-and-pop Canadian trucking company that runs a few trucks. Frank Lukacs, as was alluded to by Mr. Wegman, has been driving trucks for 4 years. And was doing so on this day. It appears to me that Mr. Wegman is asking this court to retry the facts. There are an awfully lot of facts that this jury considered that were not presented to you by Mr. Wegman, but are presented to you by the Bill of Exceptions. As Mr. Lukacs approached this smoke cloud from the south, it's true that he could see it from miles away, but when he first saw it, the smoke was drifting toward the southwest and away from the road. As he approached, the smoke began to drift across the road, but it was fairly thin. His testimony was unequivocal that as he entered the smoke cloud, he could see clearly for a half mile or more, but then suddenly as though someone threw a blanket across the windshield. The lights went out. He had moved his truck as far to the right, onto the right shoulder, as he could probably get it. His testimony was that he slowed way down. He did not anticipate, I don't think, that this plaintiff would decide to go around the cars in front of her and into the oncoming lane of traffic when she clearly and admittedly had no idea what might be coming. The impact, according to the reconstructionist, occurred between 5 and 6 feet into the northbound lane, Mr. Lukacs' lane, which means that she was in his lane at the time of the accident. So whether or not reasonable minds can differ on these facts, I suspect we could make the same argument that the trial court should have granted the defendant's motions for directed verdict on the issue of their negligence, but we haven't done that. The jury did that for us by finding that the plaintiff failed to meet her burden of proof. Now, the jury instruction, let me say that I'm embarrassed about this. I prepared personally the statement of the case that was submitted and agreed to by all the parties. When Judge Bryan handed out the proposed jury instructions toward the end of trial, I suspect that all of us looked at that statement of the case and said, oh yeah, this is the one we submitted. This is fine. None of us, I really hate to admit this on the record, none of us noticed this until we heard the judge read the instructions out loud. And he said to this jury, if you find that the negligence of the plaintiff equals or exceeds the negligence of either defendant Raines and or defendants Dellis and Lukacs, who were treated as a single defendant, appropriate, then the plaintiff may not recover. So as soon as the jury went out, We said to Judge Bryan, Your Honor, we believe that there's a critical error in the instructions that needs to be repaired. We went to work immediately on trying to remedy that problem. Judge Bryan went back to the instruction, the statement of the case instruction that had been prepared and submitted by the parties, and agreed to replace the erroneous, the misstatement with what had been submitted earlier.
The submitted one you believe was a correct statement of the law?
Yes, that is correct. The correct statement of the law is, if you find that the negligence of the plaintiff equals or exceeds the combined negligence of the defendants, then the plaintiff may not recover.
But 3 hours passed while this correction ensued, before the correction ensued?
There were a whole lot of discussions, most of which are part of the record that happened telephonically. But the key, Your Honors, is that the jury never got to the issue of contributory negligence. They simply found that the plaintiff failed to meet her burden of proof. They completed verdict forms 1 and 2, in which they found that the plaintiff did not meet her burden of proof against either defendant, and they found in favor of those defendants without ever considering the question of contributory negligence. We're not here to second-guess what that jury may have done in terms of sole proximate cause or otherwise, if I might conclude. Basically, the jury did what it did. It has considered all these facts, and it found in favor of both defendants. This, to the extent that it may be error, was certainly harmless error, because there's no evidence that it prejudiced the plaintiff in any way. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal, so we will go on to the next case of the day, which is State versus Abidji. Good morning. Is it Ms. Brown?
Ms. Chair Brown. Ms. Chair Brown.